Second aspect, when you're embracing the mess, is integrative thinkers do not flinch from considering multi-directional and non-linear causal relationships. Meaning, like I told you earlier, it's not about verticals and horizontals getting connected. There are something others also. When things go wrong, they don't mind shifting their thinking and taking a new stance. For the person who's on the other side, who doesn't understand the method in their madness of thinking, he might feel that this fellow doesn't have a mind of his own, he doesn't have a strategy. Leaders sometimes act on things just opposite to what they did, what they said. Not all of them are into integrative thinking, but the ones who are into integrative thinking are the ones who act differently, because at that situation, it demands that they do not do what they promised. They have to do something different. Now, this is a little challenging for many of us to understand, let me confess. Because when I am saying something, the people down the operation line, they literally believe that I mean it and it's going to happen. But when things go wrong for my company, I need to backtrack and do something different. Now, the people down the line may not understand why I am changing my stance. This aspect is something which the integrative thinker himself knows, because he sees a larger picture. So, he is willing to consider multi-directions as well as non-linear. Multi-direction as well as non-linear relationships. And when you have, for example, when you have funds to increase hotel rooms, there's an increase in revenue and profits. This simple relationship was understood by all. Everybody knew it. More money, more hotel rooms, more business. Anybody can do this. Nothing great about it. But Sharp also understood the hidden cost, the inverse relationship between number of rooms and guest comfort and intimacy. You see, I'm inclined to discuss or talk about something which I see when I go for trainings to companies. Companies want to keep on expanding. Fine, excellent, keep expanding. But when the scale is going up and up and up, what happens to the personal touch with the employees? Does it come down? It does. The policies, do they get diluted? It does. Is it good to keep a scale manageable? Is it good to keep a scale manageable so that the employees themselves are in touch and the management is in touch with the employees? Is that important? This is one view. If you notice, most of the successful companies, particularly cases in Europe, European organizations I've noticed, are they do not have humongous scale. They are pretty manageable scale. But the beauty about these organizations, when you see them closely, is there's a good amount of employee retention, employee focus, and they say, this is what matters to us, these boundaries, we draw them. We are ambitious to grow, but we are not crazy to grow. Inverted commas, crazy. Because while companies want to grow ambitiously, it's an inverse proportion. It's an inverse proportion to the relationship of the people inside. The larger the organization, the employee is not taken care of. This is what Isidore Sharp thought about. And he said that, let's have a type of a manageable scale in running our restaurant, in running our hotel. And so, as much as I want revenue and profits, I'm not going to crazily expand. I'm going to do something else. Sharp also understood the hidden cost, the inverse relationships between numbers of rooms and guest comfort and intimacy. Sharp also saw a complex causal relationship between guest service quality and the way employees felt about their employer. Three people: employer, employee, and the guest. If the employee is unhappy, the guest is bound to be unhappy, because it shows in the behavior. So the employer has to understand that he has to treat the employee in a way he treats his guests, because that's business for him. This causal relationship is almost taken for granted in most of the hospitality sector organizations. It happens practically everywhere, I would say, except for a few progressive organizations who see the larger picture, because they are headed by people who think like these guys, right? So, taking it further, friends, Sharp saw much different non-linear causal relationship. Employees who felt they belonged to the Four Seasons family that treated them according to the golden rule. Golden rule is what? Do unto others as they would like them, as they would like to be done unto you. And when you follow that rule, they would feel inspired to provide service well beyond the merely adequate. employees who felt disposable couldn't do more than what service handbook required. Take the example of today's outsourcing. We take great pride in, you know, getting things outsourced. A large organization is outsourcing, is having contract labor with them, permanently temporary, I call it. Do you really feel that these contract labor will be dedicated to the credo of the company? Because they are working with basic insecurity of not having a job. They are working daily just for the daily bread. Now, if you keep them permanently temporary, which is a policy of some organizations, unfortunately, do you expect them to give a customer service to a third, to a customer like us? I'm not commenting against any industry. I'm just talking about a process which is having its own flaw. We have come across a number of people, service providers, who sell us some service through a call center BPO. This youngster who's talking to us is not a permanent employee of the company's product which he's selling. And we all know the type of dedication, the type of sincerity, the type of promise this guy can make and fulfill with us is not much. Why? Because he is struggling at a basic security level. He's not sure about retaining himself for long. He's not sure about making a career for himself. Because the company has really not cared for him for whatever reasons. No aspersions against the company. That's a model which companies choose to follow. Now, instead, if this person is a core employee and you're actually going to be treating him like a family member using the golden rule, don't you all agree that we will have a very good customer service, you and me? Answer is yes, of course. Now, this is a paradigm which tend to be neglected. When you keep on growing humongously without taking into account this unstated part of customer service or disservice. Right? So, let's take it further. The third difference in embracing the masses, the architecture of their own decisions is something different which integrative thinkers do as compared to conventional thinkers. A different type of an architecture they have. Now, what do they do? Let's understand. Integrative thinkers don't break a problem into independent pieces and work on each piece separately. Very interesting. You know what they do? I can speak for myself. Given a problem, I see some pieces here and there, I start making connections. And when I start making connections, I see some new things emerging which I never thought of. Let me confess, this happens many a time with me. Take the case of giving this video lecture. I am not prepared everything that is given in the slide. Let me confess. Things are emerging. Why do they emerge? They emerge because I create an architecture which is flexible. An architecture which is going to work. At this point of time when I'm talking to you, there's a sensitivity about how you as a viewer, you as my student is going to understand it. So while that is going on in my mind, it becomes easy for me to put the architecture flexibility. So I prepare a broad set of points which I need to cover. But at the same time, while I'm talking, there are new things that are emerging automatically. Now, that's what happens in this case. Integrative thinkers don't break a problem into independent pieces and work on each piece separately. They keep the entire problem firmly in mind while working on the individual parts. I could take this video lecture, making it into small parts and stick onto the parts. That's not the way it'll reach you. You means there is a whole lot of you who are going to be listening to me. Different people, youngsters, old people, housewives. This is what is the audience all about, right? Now, each of you need to understand it your way. So I need to have that open creative approach to see that I customize the conversation accordingly, right? And so I have to look at the whole, and in that whole, some parts have to be filled up. I can't take the whole, cut it into parts and say part one, part two, part three, part four, part five. No, it's not possible. If I do it that way, then I may be missing out on something which probably one of you would want as a most vital, unstated thing. Right? We try our level best to give the unstated. There still remains something unstated. That's the time when students come and approach us and they ask for questions and we give them answers. Right? A very creative approach is important when you do integrative thinking. They would consider cost of manufacturing while and not after designing a product. Imagine, you know, there was a time when I started my career as a production engineer. Production was concerned only about production. If I have to manufacture this component, I'm only concerned about manufacturing this component. Simple. designing part of it is done by another colleague of mine in the design department. I am not connected with him. It's isolated. Today it is not so. When I am manufacturing this product, I am integrating my manufacturing with the way the designing has happened, the shape, the texture, etc. of this product, and I am also connected with the customer's requirement, the ease with which he is handling this particular contraption. Now all these things are a part of the production person today in the shop floor. As much as the marketing guy who is selling this, as much as the quality control person who is taking care of the QC of this particular contraption. So today we are encouraging in all organizations, every employee, be it the clerk, be it the CEO, be it the dispatch officer, everybody has to think in an integrative fashion. Like Isidore Sharp does in his Four Seasons, there is no service department, customer service department. There is no need for that. If every one of us from the bottom of the ladder of the organization right up to the top, if every one of us is looking at each other as a service person, then the question of, you know, having a separate service department, complaints department doesn't arise at all. Everybody is an equally responsible stakeholder as far as the customer's needs are concerned. As clear as that. Right? So, taking further, friends, the decision to make the golden rule the basis of the hotel operations as a choice that bound together and made possible the other major choices. Treat your people well. Treat people the way they like to be treated. The golden rule. And then everything falls in place. Everything falls in place. This is exactly what he did. Companies, many companies, they say this. It's there on the board. It's there in the reception. But they don't practice it. Because it should be done willfully, driven from the top to the bottom. If every person is truly treated the way he likes to be treated, then why would he not stretch himself and give more than the ordinary to the company? That is the vision, right? And the fourth one, the fourth and the final difference between integrative and conventional thinkers is in the search for creative resolution of tension rather than unpleasant trade-off. What do they do? Two opposite ideas. This is pleasurable to me. I love to do this. I've enjoyed doing this. I've succeeded doing this. This is not pleasurable to me. I don't like it. Conventional thinker will simply drop it. He will justify saying that I've done this. I've succeeded. So this is the best. He may even go to the extent of ridiculously criticizing this and putting this down when somebody comes up with this thought. Integrative thinker will take this and this. Personally, he's not liking it at this point of time, but he will look into it. He's got the guts. He's got the intuition. He's got the, emotional intelligence to say that this has a meaning. Otherwise, it wouldn't exist. He takes this. He takes the one which is pleasurable, the one that is not pleasurable, combines both of them and comes out with a creative resolution. It needs a lot of openness. It needs a lot of openness. Take an example of an HR. A human resources department. In an HR, all human beings have got their own likes and dislikes of people. Agreed? Now, I may like X because X is in line of my thinking. I may not like Y because Y is not in line with my thinking. This is my personal like and dislike. When A comes to me with a trivial problem, I try to solve it. When B comes to me with a major issue, I don't solve it. This is human nature. If I take these two equally important as the issue rather than the people, will I not be integrating? Answer is yes. How many of us do this? Very few of us. If we learn to practice integrative thinking and action, you know what are we doing? We are actually addressing issues and issues and issues. We are depersonalizing the organization, not to make it robotic, but to see to it that people are involved in the process rather than finger pointing. Very important, right? The fourth and the final difference between the integrative thinker and the conventional thinker is in the search for creative resolution. The creative resolution of the tension of the opposites rather than the unpleasant trade-off. It's not an either-or approach, it's an and approach. Sharp was after the best of a small motel and a large hotel. He wanted the combination of both, the inn and the large convention center. He was not ready to sacrifice one for the other and wasn't satisfied with either. The only way to accomplish his goal was to create new to the world model, and we see this process of integrative thinking next. Right? Let's see what is such. This is a particular flowchart which has been shown before, which I am again showing in a different context right now. Salience is the first step. It leads to causality. Causality leads to architecture. Architecture leads to resolution. This is the way we all do our cognitive processes. More features of the problem is considered salient. An integrative thinker, what does he do? He doesn't take just features like I told you in the particular holiday example. He takes more features. He sits down. He does brainstorming. He takes ideas from different people, from people who are dissimilar to his thinking. What do we all do? We love ideas from people who think like us. It takes guts, it takes openness to take ideas from everybody, particularly from the people who think totally opposite to you. So he does this, and every feature is considered to be important, and to that he takes a causality. And multi-directional and non-linear causality he is considering. That means he is saying, let's see what happens if I implement this person's idea. Let's see what happens. Okay, if you say that to reach from here to Bangalore, we can go by flight. What are the possibilities of taking different flights? I am a strong believer. Let us say that I go only by train. And I am pushing it down the throat of people. Everybody should go by train. And there comes a person who says, nothing, doing flight is best. For whatever reasons. Now, am I open to his causality as well? Then I get multiple causality out here. And when this happens, we are getting a whole visualized architecture. We have a number of frameworks from where we can operate. If X doesn't work, Y works. Y doesn't work, Z works. And it's all happening comfortably, very comfortably, right? And when this happens, the action steps, the resolution, search for creative resolution of tensions. It's very easy. And after the results come, what do? We feed it back to the architecture, question the architecture, question the causality, question the salience, add new salience, and the whole thing goes like that, like a cycle. Trust me, my dear friends, do it as many times as possible, and you'll find that suddenly you have become an integrative thinker in every situation of your life. The most important payoff that anybody gets into integrative thinking is that he is always joyful when is in his life. There are no frustrations. At the emotional level, people feel so joyous to do things because nothing affects them. Nothing affects them negatively. Anything happens, fine, let's see what we can do out of it. There's an opportunity seen in every situation, not a threat. Right? So, conventional thinking or settling for the second best. The title of this chapter is what? No stomach for the second best. Now, conventional thinkers always don't mind for second and third best. They say, that's the way it is. You know, I cannot get everything. You can't eat the cake and have it too. The favorite expression. Integrative thinker says, eat the cake and have it too, both. Right? Now, the conventional thinking, now I'll be covering how the conventional thinker's salience works, his causality works, his architecture, and the way he does a resolution. The salience of the conventional thinker is keep simple, clear features and abandon the rest. Simplification through specialization. We have all been taught simplify, simplify, simplify. Good. We need to simplify. We have also been taught specialize. That's also important. When I simplify, I tend to become oblivious about the connections of my simplified unit with your simplified unit. That should not happen. Simplify by all means, but my simplified approach should be, I must be aware that this is connected with all the whole system. Similarly, specialization, vertical, only marketing, only operations. Specialization is important. But when I specialize, I tend to become tunnel vision. My way is the best way. Marketing guys will say that marketing approach is the best approach for the company's success. Operations guys will say operations is the best approach. This might happen. It doesn't happen all the time. I can have simplification and specialization together looking at the larger picture. Companies which are excelling in their merchandise and remain excellent. Companies which are excelling in service and remain excellent all the time are the ones who are combining simplification and specialization together. Why? Because every employee, while he's specializing, he's with a larger picture. While he's simplifying, he's with a larger picture. By themselves, they are not bad. But when you put it in isolation, when you don't see the macro picture, you see only the micro, myself and me alone, my department, my goals, then the trouble starts. Then the trouble starts. Right? When decisions go wrong, it is realized that cause was not considered salient. Very important part. Am I taking the various salient features into picture or not? This is where cross-functional teams, today we talk about, right? Cross-functional teams have to come together. And when they come together, you know what happens? You are an operation person. You talk in operations with sound and fury. I am a marketing person. I talk with my sound and fury. All of us have a big ruckus in the room. At the end of it, you know, we have to really sit down and we start looking at things from different angles. This is so important. If I look at you as an adversary, as an enemy of mine, you are a marketing guy. And you know, you always make my life trouble. If I look at you as an adversary, as an enemy, then this doesn't work. That's where the whole credo is one, wherein we have to respect the employees. The employees have to feel good about each other. We are handling issues, not persons. Right? This error in salience is caused by restricting the salience to the purview of our job and functions. But I've already explained this, and we do not wish to think out of box. Many of us are very happy. And the paradox of life is what? The higher you go in the organization, you become more boxed in. You know, you get so full of your success stories. You feel so fantastic that, you know, I succeed my way. My thinking is the best thinking. And you start institutionalizing your thinking. You start writing books about it. And you say, this is the best way to do things. Nothing wrong about all these things. But when you do this and you exclude the other things, that's where the trouble comes. By all means, sing about yourself. By all means, blow your trumpet. But when you're blowing your trumpet, don't say that your instrument is not as good as my trumpet. This happens by default, unfortunately. So when changes are taking place in the company, when the change is required to the company, we have a dearth of people, dearth of leaders who do not think out of box. They don't think out of box. And out of box is not crazy stuff, thinking something stupidly. It has to be something which you think differently, which comes back in the form of an innovation. Application into usefulness. Very important. Okay. Now causality. How do these guys address causality? The conventional thinkers. A narrow and a simplistic view. It is a reason that leads to... Now I'll explain the three points in a brief way. What is salience? Those things which are important for me. A conventional thinker will shortlist A, B, C. Since A is important, B is important, C is important, he will take his thoughts into causality in that direction only. Lowering of cost, increasing profit margins, and reducing wastage. Only three salient. So all my thinking and action is only in this direction. Am I right or wrong? Will I think of customer service? I never thought of it. That doesn't become my causality. Since it doesn't become a causality, I don't give it a thought at all. And when I don't give it a thought, after I take actions on these three, this is totally neglected, the unspoken, the unthought of. Since this is neglected, when this issue comes up with the customer, these three, I don't even visualize, I don't even think that these three were short memory type of thing. If I expand myself into other areas, A, B, C, D, E, F, then this would not happen. Conventional thinker takes three choices, thinks only in the direction, period. Next, architecture. What does he do? In focusing on small details, the sight of the whole is lost. Several individual decisions take place, correct in themselves, but holistic approach is absent. Outcome is mediocre. Number of examples of organizations are there. Marketing department is excellent. Product is not good. Production is good, they churn out quality products, but the service department is horrible. Does it not happen? Because there's a disjointedness. In the subject principles of management, we learned about coordination, remember? So we talk about the importance of, you know, verticals getting coordinated. They have to build bridges. In many companies, organizations are working with silos, like silos. And since they work with silos, what happens? The outcome is mediocre. Good product, but bad name in the market. good service, but promises which are made by the back office is not being taken care of. So this lopsided way of doing things is an outcome which happens in this type of a thinking process, the architecture, right? And now the resolution. The conventional thinker, what sort of resolution he does? Usually unpleasant trade-offs are accepted without much complaint. Do I give bonus to shareholders out of my profits? Or do I keep the money in reserves for future expansion? Now, when I do one, the other one gets affected. So if he's a conventional thinker, he'll say, I think shareholders are important because he thinks it is important for his salience. So he'll say, let's give bonus or let's give dividends. And when he gives dividends, the expansion of the company goes for a stall. Unpleasant trade-off. Or he may do the other way around. Integrative thinker will try to integrate both. He'll say this and that, not this or that. Right? The management has a typical response. What else could we have done in these circumstances? Where was there any other alternative available? Don't you hear this very often? People shrug their shoulders and say, oh, that's the best we could do. The best shot I could give to the situation. Yes, of course you did. But did you do integration? Did you come out of the tunnel thinking and do something different? Okay? The alternative, much more satisfactory, was there only if decision was approached from different direction. One that embraced complexity, multi-directional causal relationships and holistic and not segmented thinking. Okay, this is about the conventional thinker. Now, how different are integrative thinkers different from conventional thinkers? Now, we are covering this. The integrative thinker, how does he think? They tend to consider more variables of a problem to be salient rather than seeking a single prominent variable. As many variables as possible, they take in. They study the problem as much as possible and they are inclined to seek out alternative views and contradictory data. Important thing is contradictory data. Okay? They are willing to embrace a more complex understanding to know how these salient features interconnect and influence one another, a more complex understanding of the causality. It requires an openness and a willingness to stretch your thinking. And this comes through practice. When you're willing to get yourself vulnerable into thinking and brainstorming, when you're ready to allow people to contest your ideas frequently, and then you start expanding, that's the time these things start happening to you and me. Right? Rather than limiting the possible causal relationships to simple linear one-way dynamics, they entrain the possibility of the causal forces may be multi-directional. Already explained earlier. They approach the problem as a problem architecture differently. Rather than try to deal with the elements in piece, parts or sequentially, they arrive all times to keep the whole of the problem in mind while working on the individual parts. Faced with the two opposing options, they strive for a creative resolution of the tension and do not simply accept the choices before them. So this is how they are different, how these integrative thinkers are different from the conventional ones. Now this is a type of a, again the diagram is coming back to explain to us conventional thinking on one side and integrative thinking on the other side. The conventional thinker goes by 1, 2, 3. This is the path he takes. He stops here. He may make some diagnostic changes for the results that come and then he may give up on certain things only to come back here with the old salience. He may add one or two extra salience perhaps after getting a feedback. This guy, what does he do? Conventional thinker, he goes 1, 2, 3, 4 and he comes back again, resets his architecture, questions the architecture which he used before, questions the causality, questions the salience, adds more salience, and this is a continuous process. Integrative thinking is a continuous process. I was talking about conventional thinking, right? Conventional thinking is this way, integrative is all along. It's a continuous process. You cannot take a degree in integrative thinking, do a one-year course, or you have done integrative thinking for two or three projects and I'm an integrative thinker. Sorry, it's a way of life. You may kickstart in a training program how to do integrative thinking. Yes, that can be done. But how to sustain it is also important. You need follow-ups. You need to do many things for yourself. Challenge your status quo about what you're doing today. Challenge your own success factors today because those would move tomorrow into something else. So when something else comes, you're not shocked, you're not stunned, you face it, you get the courage to do it, right? Now, again a run through whatever I've covered here. Integrative thinkers take a broad view of what is salient. More salient features make for messier problems. But thinkers, integrative thinkers do not mind the mess because they know the best answers arise from complexity. Integrative thinkers do not flinch from considering multidimensional and nonlinear causal relationships. System dynamics tools helps integrative thinkers consider complex causal loop in creating the modulus and help them build modulus in which the whole is viewed rather than split into discrete parts. Architecture of their decisions is different for integrative and conventional thinkers. Using the same system perspective, integrative thinkers keep the entire problem firmly in mind while working on the individual components. As they do with salience and causality, integrative thinkers allow complexity to compound as they design their decisions. It means, you know, when I'm progressing in any project, newer things keep coming up. Am I including those newer things as a new knowledge and a new action taking is important? Because many a time, when I'm halfway through a project and a change happens, I take action in such a way that either I am blind to the change, I say it doesn't exist, or I try to do a diagnostic to change the change. It's important for us to know that particular change is telling us something which we need to act upon. Good leaders act upon it. Okay? Finally, integrative thinkers will always search for creating resolution of tension rather than accepting unpleasant trade-off. And there is a run-through of the conventional thinking also. The aim of the conventional thinking is to simplify or reduce the complexity of the features of the cognitive process to reach resolution as efficiently as possible. This simplification process begins with the consideration of what features of the situations are salient, that is, which narrow set of features must be considered in order to come to a resolution. I've already explained this, so I'm skipping this. Let's take it further. Okay, this is also taken care of. Salience is narrowed down to causality. All this is explained in the earlier part of it. And now I'm coming to the world as it is or it might be. Differences between the way integrative thinker takes the world and how the conventional thinker takes the world. Integrative thinker produces possibilities, solutions and new ideas. The conventional thinker hides potential solutions. He takes only what is workable, whatever is acceptable right now. This person erodes aspiration. When you are a conventional thinker, after some time your aspirations come down because you are into a box already. In this case, the aspirations rise over time because he sees exciting new things happening. Right? Acceptance of unattractive and unpleasant trade-off. These people are content with compromises. Whereas out here, they shape the world for the better. These people make the world happen. And they accept the world as it is, these guys. That's the difference, okay? And then now, we come to the summary, the conclusion of this whole module. The process of thinking and deciding has four stages of salience, causality, architecture, and resolution. The conventional thinker restricts to limited salient features, simplified consideration of causality, has a sequential independent architecture, and as a result is ready to accept unattractive trade-offs. The integrative thinker covers large features as salient, considers multi-direction non-linear causality, has an architecture that visualizes whole while working on individual parts, and as a result searches for creative resolution to the problem. He or she welcomes the challenge of shaping the world for the better. As narrated by a student of integrative management, a student of mine came to me. She has been a student of integrative management, and she told me a small her own experience. And she said that one day an employee found herself in an either-or situation. She said that her reporting manager asked her to consider leaving the job if she cannot work late. She needed the job to take care of her family, which had major financial issues. Moreover, she had to attend to her ailing mother and had to leave at the closing time. She was not even aware that her company had a policy to work from home because of her limited view. She assumed the worst could happen and she checked out whether other possibilities of not losing the job and also taking care of her mother by leaving office at usual closing time existed. Okay, now what happened? She blinked and could not think. She had not developed thinking of more saliences because she thought that if I go late, my mother will be having a problem. If I go on time, my boss will have a problem. Now people get stuck up with this. They don't go and explore. what could be the policy. They don't go and ask questions. This is what she did. She talked to her HR department with an open mind. She was surprised when the HR manager informed her about her company's policy that permitted to work from home under special circumstances. This was not known to her. Nobody told her, and she also did not ask. They immediately suggested that the company does not wish to lose an efficient employee like her, and there was plenty of work which she could do. She could perform. The option of working from home was offered and immediately accepted by her. She created an architecture of a new routine, which was a combination of working in an office and also from home. Today it is very common in IT industry, working from home, right? She would continue to take care of her mother too, and she integrated her thinking and resolved the problem. Right, friends? That brings us to the end of this particular module. And before we proceed to the chapter number 3, it's my suggestion that all of you who are listening to me, run through chapter 1 and 2 video sessions. Go through the book also. And those of you who are already having the subject as a part of your syllabus right now, please make it a point to attend the virtual class and also the personal contact program lectures at the institute. All the best and happy integrative thinking and action.